Welcome to the fifth edition of the Weird for Good Hangout, and I'm really pleased to have you with us today, whether you're on YouTube or have joined us from a link from Facebook or my blog. And today we have a couple dynamic individuals joining us. Melissa Ford from Chicago. Welcome, Melissa.
And hey,
you can find Melissa online at empoweredparentingsolutions.com. She's a parent coach and someone that I've been privileged to work with over the last year. And Michael Wright joins us from Georgia. He is the blogger of fatherofone.com, and you can check out his blog there. And again, we welcome Michael back to join us and appreciate his input too. So thank you both for being here with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, we will get into the topic of this week's blog. Once again, we're not going to read the blog because it would take a long time and people can do that on their own. But we'll start with the title, Hiding Monsters Under the Bed. And if you've read it or if you click the link below and check it out, you'll see that the idea is that we have monsters. We have or I do anyway, I think most people have a monsters of ideas that you sort of hide under your own bed. And as I began writing on Friday this blog, I just was thinking of what I wanted to write about, but the things I wanted to express, I didn't feel would be, put it this way, very nice to post out to the world. And they were sort of monstrous little thoughts that were going on in my head that day for whatever reason. And I thought, I can't, you know, just express this stuff. So I'm going to keep it to myself. But what about those thoughts and what do they do for us in our lives? The coaching work that I've been involved with as a coach and as a client of dynamic coaches has typically pointed to thoughts like this, emotions that we want to push away and hide as points of entry to do some amazing work that can actually push your life forward, that can help you drop these things for good. And as my coach Megan Silito has taught me, that these monsters can only live in the dark. They can only live when we keep them hidden, and that's where they thrive and survive at. So once we kind of bring them up out into the light, whether it's in a coaching session or maybe with a close friend, but someone who's going to not just feed those things and kind of support you in the way that doesn't help you challenge them, but someone that can help you dissect these things and kind of get to the bottom of them and say, is this really true for me or for the situation? Those are the monsters I'm talking about, and I hope you guys are willing to kind of share with me a little bit today your take on this idea. And I'll say that Melissa has helped me with monsters under my bed before, so I'm really glad she's here to join us. Melissa, thank you for the work you've helped me with. Do you have a take on this thought in general?
I absolutely do, and I like how you use the phrase monsters under the bed, because for me, I used to think that the monsters were outside. So I was somebody who was very willing to point the finger and blame people for what was going on with me, my unhappiness, why I was so ineffective in my life. And when I started to get that the monsters were my thoughts about what was going on outside of me, rather than truly what was happening, that's when I could start to change things. And it took me a while when I initially started, if you will, working on myself. It took me a while to be able to really tell myself what was going on without judging it. Because if you reveal a monster to yourself, like I'm stupid or I'm not good enough or what's wrong with me or I'll never figure this out or I can't handle things, whatever you might come up with, if you reveal it to yourself and then you go about judging it, now you're off on another path. Now you've got another monster that you've unleashed, which is your judgment about yourself. And so it took me a while to get to the point where I could be curious, I could be loving, and I could be accepting of myself. When I looked at, you know, was it true? was this something I really couldn't do, and why did I believe it, and what was I trying to accomplish by thinking that way? It took a while, because the biggest problem with the monsters I've discovered is that once we believe it, it's true. That's the biggest problem with the monster. It's really not true, but our ability to believe it makes it so. So if that's helpful at all, I don't know if you have any comments about that, or Michael, but that was my beginning of revealing monsters to myself.
Yeah, that was beautiful. I mean, to me, that's almost like, I think of my 7-year-old daughter, and she saw a video a couple of years ago with some eggs, and they talked. And now she has this fear of eggs that talk. And it seems childish, and I look at that, and I'm thinking, well, that's just not true. I mean, it's so obvious. But in the same way, a 30, 40, 50-year-old person can still think things that really are not true. They hear those things talking to them, like you're talking, like you're mentioning. It's just not true. And it takes exposing them maybe to other people, a coach, as you think this is true about me, and it's really not. I mean, the deepest part of what is true about you is goodness, love, mm-hmm. all those things we think are bigger than that. When you expose them to the truth, they just kind of fade away. And so absolutely, it takes a person of wisdom to see that, and sometimes a coach to bring that out of a person.
Yeah, I agree. And Aaron, you know, I have 3 favorite questions, right? So when you reveal a monster to yourself, like, I'm unlovable, right? And you really believe that. So of course, then it's true. I always like to say, there's 3 questions I have, and they're all about your fear about not believing it. So one of them would be, what would I be afraid would happen if I no longer believed that I wasn't lovable? And what I love about that question is you start to see that you're believing this because you're trying to help yourself, you're trying to protect yourself, you're trying to make sure that you're okay. So somebody's response, everybody would have a different response to that, but I might say, what would I be afraid would happen if I no longer believed I was unlovable? I might say, well, then maybe if I didn't believe it, then maybe it'd really be true. So I'm going to believe it now so I don't have to later find out that it's true. Or maybe I can make sure that I am lovable, or whatever we're trying to do. So I like those kinds of questions because, Michael, just like you said, it starts to reveal it's really not true, but we're afraid not to believe it.
It's a protection in a way.
Yep.
Like you say, it's that rung true, because that is a way we protect ourselves. And yeah, sometimes it's safer to think I'm not lovable, so you don't have to venture out. You don't have to go get that new client that's waiting for you to serve them. You think, well, I'm not lovable, so they wouldn't like me. So sometimes it's a way to escape. I think living out of your true self is work. It takes some work. It takes bravery. It takes courage to do that.
Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of bravery. This is wonderful discussion, and I want to pick up on a little bit of what Melissa started out with, because I think I am at the evolution point myself where I'm maybe not even as far down up the ladder as Melissa is, where as soon as I grab this thought of this monster, I immediately get the judgment, this is a bad monster. So, therefore, now like you said, you're off on a whole nother tangent. Before you can even get to the work mode of dissecting this thing and seeing if it's true and doing these types of questions, you know, I think I can even get caught up before we get there in saying, this is a bad thing. Where, you know, most of the work and most of the recommendations you'll get out there is like, you know, how about we just notice our thoughts? How about we just back out and notice what's passing by without, you know, just as the cloud passes across the sky? And without that judgment of that thing, I can use a sentence for myself like, my mind's really active today. You know, versus saying, like, everybody sucks in the whole world. You know, it's like, you know, I really can do that, but that judgment, that self-judgment of those thoughts as they come across, I think is one of the first enemies that we can maybe start to chip away at and say, okay, what if I just notice this thing and maybe kind of give myself a little bit of a break around, you know, that this is such a bad thing, and therefore that means I'm a bad person, and therefore that means this other person's a bad person because I think this thought about them and all that. So, yeah.
Well, you know, if you're not, you know, to take the what was said, you know, if you say I'm not lovable, well, I bet you could easily name three times that you were lovable, and when you love people and when you serve people. And so, I mean, when you think about your life and you think, well, you just have these blanket statements like the world sucks, well, do you really think your wife sucks? I mean, that's the whole world. I mean, it's not true. I mean, it's just not true. If you start kind of piecing it, taking it apart and dissecting it, it's just not true. It's ridiculous what our minds will throw in there as blanket statements, you know? So, yeah, you start kind of picking it apart, and you're like, well, this is just kind of like a third-grade mentality, you know. You smell, that means everybody smells, you know, or, I don't know, it, you know. A little examination will, you know, help fix that sometimes.
So. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Aaron, I just want to say something really quick, because I thought what you brought up was good. So we come up with a monster, whether it's I'm not lovable or I think everybody sucks or whatever it is, and then we judge ourselves. And then we judge ourselves for having the thought, and then we're judging other people, and we feel really bad. Last week I sat down with somebody, and she really had just admitted she just beats herself up all the time. She judges herself a lot. And she looked really distressed. And I said, well, you know, why is that bad? Your question, right? Why is that bad? And she said, because, you know, I've been doing it for so long, I'm never going to get over this. So this is something I learned from Steve Chandler, and I think through reading other people, which is we have stories about our stories. So we, you know, the story is that I'm unlovable or I beat myself up, and then I've got a story about that, you know. It's going to take me forever to get over because I've been doing it for 50 years, or it's in my DNA, or I've got, as Steve would say, I've got the beat myself up deficiency gene, or I've got, you know, all this stuff going on. And then we get wrapped up in that belief. So we've got a negative belief, a limiting belief about our limiting belief. So that's why it's really great to start to be able to cut yourself slack and notice things and be willing to just look closer without judging it.
Yeah, and I want to throw in another little story that I heard over the weekend that I think applies here. And it's basically the classroom teacher was holding out a Coke can and said, how heavy is this Coke can? And the you know, the student said, well, it's 12 ounces or whatever. And she says, no, it depends how long I've been holding it of how heavy it is. And so, you know, you can imagine if you're just holding a can of Coke out there, well, if you hold it for a minute or so, it's not that heavy. But if you had to hold it for an hour, you know, what if you held it for a whole day? You know, could you hold a can of Coke straight out for a week? You know, it may not even be possible, and yet it doesn't weigh that much. But I think some of these beliefs, some of these monsters, these thoughts can seem heavier the longer we hold on to them. And I know that I've got some that I've had, you know, you could say your whole life or feels like that long. And so mm-hmm. they feel really heavy, you know. And I wonder if it's some of the same thing, like the longer we have them hanging around, the more impact they have. But yet they're really not any heavier than any other thought. I mean, it's just a thought. That can be dissected, can be brought to light, and it may seem heavier because the longer we've had it around, makes it seem like a bigger deal.
Right. What we believe about it. We've had it for a long time, so it's a bigger deal. Yeah. Or now they talk about brain science, right? So we hear this all the time, and that you've worn these grooves into your brain, and you've built these synapses, or whatever the phrase is, and so it's now it's hardwired, right? So that's going on. I was talking to somebody, they were talking about metaphysics, and they said, the biggest problem with that is the law of attraction and all of that. So now if you have negative energy, or you're vibrating at low energy, now the biggest problem is, the belief behind that is now you're going to attract more negative stuff to yourself. So there's that belief.
Yeah, a fun belief that sounds really great at the beginning, like, hey, I have positive thoughts and I can have a bunch of positive stuff. But uh-oh, today I had a crappy day.
Right.
And which happens in life. And now I'm going to attract another crappy day because I had a crappy day. So
That's weird because I always heard opposites attract. But I don't know. I know in engineering class, positive and negative attract. So I don't know. That's kind of a weird thought. So, but I fully believe that if you think good things will come. I mean, because I just think that's just how the universe works. So,
well, and I think one of the things that I'm talking about here in the blog that it gives us hope here, and I know that we've had some more experience with this stuff than some of the people that may be watching this, is that let's say that the beliefs are that important. Let's say that these monsters are that important to our lives. Well, that's within our control, you know. You can get on my Facebook stream for the last few days, and the weather has caused mayhem among lives lately. You know, the weather, the snow that we've had, you know, it's mayhem now. But that is something so outside of my control. I personally don't feel a big need to worry too much about it. A belief or a thought or something that's going on in my mind is something in my control, and that seems a lot more important to put my energy or to, you know, read books about, or to contact coaches about, you know, because now there's a little bit of hope that if I want to move on, if I want to have a new set of beliefs or see what else I can do with my mind, then that is within the realm of my control. So I think sometimes we don't quite realize that our belief system is really important. And it's something that we can do something about.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think not many people have been taught about belief systems. They hear belief systems, they might think about church or religion, but we're taught it's the snow that's causing us misery. We're not taught it's what we think about the snow. It's not really taught anywhere. And that's something I was thinking about with your daughter, Michael. Like, how incredible would that be if they started teaching that in school?
Yeah, well, we teach her at home now, so that's up to us. So that's a good challenge to us, to me personally, to to do that. Yeah, but that's right. When you say it rains, I've heard Steve Chandler say, "When it rains, oh gosh, it's raining." One person will say, "Oh, that," you know. Another person will say, "Wow, it's raining." You know, when I look outside today, it was raining here, and I was thinking, "Man, it's," because I just raked the leaves the day before, and everything was kind of washed clean, and it looked so nice on the lawn, and the patio was all clean. So I'm thinking, oh man, I'm glad it rained. It washed all that junk away from, you know. So it is definitely the way you look at a circumstance that really determines how things are going to turn out for you. I had a bracelet last week. I showed Aaron. It's event plus response equals outcome. I think that's an old formula that goes way back to forget who. But it really is true. I mean, you know, no matter what happens, the way you respond to it, the way you think about it, really does determine how the outcome is.
Yep.
Yeah, and Melissa, I think she can give us a little bit of, you know, her school of ways to deal with these things. And I can personally attest to the fact that it's a great one. The questions that she asked to help us pop that stuff loose. So I guess, you know, taking some ownership in this and saying, you know, this is my problem. This is something that it's my choice. Here's something that I can do about it. I offered up three things that I thought, and maybe you guys can add to my ideas, but you know, upon choosing a new thought or around choosing a new thought. My first one was, I don't have to care about that thought anymore. I mean, I can just kind of quickly in the moment decide that thought, I just give up really caring about it. I can just detach instantly. And I have done that even recently in a tough situation. And it was just funny because it takes something that was such a dramatic, you know, corner that I felt like I was really backed into, and I just felt things welling up. And I just said, but all this physical reaction is because I care so much about this thing. I could just say I don't care. And in that moment, I went from almost like yelling, wanting to throw something across the room, to like just laughing and kind of goofing about it, you know. And it's just, it's funny because even in that moment, I'm telling, you know, the person in the conversation, I'm saying, I think I'm helping here by caring so much. I think I'm helping us, you know, by getting all wound up. But the truth was, everything was much better when I just decided to detach from my, you know, my emotions around there. So that's one thing that I've experienced. The second one was that I could test my thought as being not 100% accurate. I could ask some questions, you know, and just test the accuracy, which the questions or ideas rarely live through the questioning of 100% accuracy. I mean, they just, or truth, you know, saying, is that 100% true? How can you know that? That's the Byron Katie stuff there. And then three, I said I can make a decision that my mental energy is more important than this issue and just sort of back out. It's another way of backing out, but kind of putting my own, you know, putting myself higher up on the priority list and my well-being higher up there. And I love this quote that I have on my desk among many, but it's about forgiveness, and it's a big lesson that I need in my life, forgiveness. And basically, it's a Byron Katie quote, and it says, forgiveness is the discovery that what you thought happened didn't. And that one for me is really big, because that's really, for me, looks at people, looks at the past, looks at, you know, something that I saw, a person acting a certain way. You know, it's like, what if the forgiveness is just realizing that what I thought that really was wasn't even that at all? You know, and we can't know that, and it's just a whole puzzle we try to put together, I think, sometimes, of fixing all these things or, you know, figuring out whys of things that happened a long time ago. But the truth is, it probably didn't even happen the way you think it did.
Right, right.
Or the motivations weren't the same as you thought they were or whatever. So that's forgiveness.
Yeah. Now, I always get amazed on that note, Aaron. My wife's family, she has a brother, her mom and dad, and they tell these stories over and over about things that happened 20 years ago. And there's some stories that required forgiveness, but each of them has a different take on it. And it's like their own personal spin. And when I talk to them individually, they're like, no, it didn't happen like that. And they're mad about this because they did this. And they're like, well, that, like, I didn't even know she felt that way. I'm like, well, I don't, you know, so it's how we perceive stories may not be the real story. I mean, we may be living in this fictitious thing we think happened, but in our mind, it really is reality. I mean, if we think it happened, then it happened. And so I think that version of forgiveness is very powerful, almost acting like it didn't happen. It may not have happened. I mean, you know, so that's a pretty powerful quote. I'd never heard that before. But
yeah, it's good. We know it didn't happen. You know, I just wanted to say a couple things, Aaron. You know, you were talking about caring, and that's something that's a really, it's a really powerful word, because we talk about the fact that caring is synonymous with feeling uncomfortable and getting unhappy. Like, if I really care, then I'm going to show my unhappiness. And what I've discovered is that I can care and feel good, because caring is just knowing something. It's knowing I care, and I can feel good and know I care and just do whatever I do. So that's something that I discovered, I don't know, like 15, 18 years ago, raising children. So what do you think of that idea?
Well, I mean, Melissa, I have been in person with you, and I love this energy that you, I always compliment you on this, but, you know, that caring detachment, that's just the way it came out there, but it's really important. I mean, if you could unpack that even just a little further, just to talk, I think that's something that I have not seen in a lot of people, you know. It seems like, and the cultural backdrop is that if I'm passionate about something, if I care about something, then I'm willing to go to battle for it, or I'm willing to die for my cause type of thing. And I think you're kind of saying that I can be aware and compassionate and aside so that my own mental well-being can be in continuum. It doesn't have to break down because I care about this situation that's going on. How is that? Am I off base there? Or I'd love to hear more about that.
No, I think that's really good. Well, you know, ask anybody to define what caring means. So, for instance, I have a girlfriend. She says, well, if I care, then that means I'm willing to do something. And for me, that was never the definition. That was never the belief of care. Care meant, for me years ago, that if I really cared, then I would show it by becoming unhappy. So my caring was, let's say my kid, my son would come into the kitchen, and let's say he was mad about something, he'd start screaming at me. Well, in order for me to know that I cared not to be screamed at, then I'd have to get angry. Because otherwise, I couldn't know that I didn't care for that behavior. Or let's say he fell down and he hurt himself. Then I'd have to be really unhappy to know that I cared for him. Like, I really cared that I didn't want him to get hurt. And what I discovered was that those were two separate things. Caring was one thing. And caring meant that I wanted the best for him. And then my emotion was another thing. And so that I was actually more powerful in my caring if I chose to be comfortable and okay than I was when I was unhappy. So if my son fell down and hurt himself, I could feel fine inside and absolutely knew that I cared and I wanted something different. So I could go over to him and I could say, hey, are you okay? Oh, you're not. What can I do? Right? So I'm still taking action. I'm still expressing my caring versus I could have done it before really uncomfortably. I could have run over and go, are you okay? Are you okay? Is there anything I can do? I'd much rather care the first way. So there, I don't know if that explains it, but I just learned how to separate my negative motion from my caring, my wanting the best for you, my love.
Sounds like caring from a place of strength instead of a place from anxiety. You can care. Sounds like you're caring from a strong place instead of caring from a weak place, if you can even call that caring. You have peace about it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the word caring is so charged, though. You know what I mean? Like, Aaron, just like you said, if I cared, I'm passionate, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And I like to care right in a more powerful way, in a stronger way, which is, wow, if I really care and I'm really passionate about something, darn it, I'm really going to get clear about what it is that I want. I'm going to be really creative at figuring out a plan to go after it, and I'm going to go. Whatever it takes, I'm gonna accomplish it.
Yeah, and that's even more. You're more capable in that moment because of you're not totally directed into the pain or into the meat of the situation. Standing just in your own power, your own source, you can think clearly. You can drive better to the hospital. You could, right. You know. You can dial the phone right to get some help or whatever you need to do if you're in a more peaceful place in your mind and you could logically kind of work through a tough situation versus just screaming loud enough that the neighbors have to do the calling because you, right. You know, the kid wrecked the bike or whatever it is, you know. But I think that's really powerful for people to hear, and anybody watching this will be enlightened by that thought, because as you said, that is something that's not usual and probably not natural to most parents, especially new parents or first-time parents, that, you know, it may seem like it's the best thing to do is to, you know,
hit the panic button.
Yeah, hit the panic button.
Yeah. Yeah, and all it does is it just takes, like you said, pulling the monster out, questioning it. Do I really have to care by being unhappy? Why is that? And then it takes testing out something different, just seeing, wow, how much more powerful am I? Do I really express my caring when I behave this way?
Do I really express my caring when I behave this way? Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. And I'll just say, Melissa has helped me through a tough, what I'd call lifelong thing for me. And that's basically the big question. That was the turning point in the conversation, was that, do I really express my caring by behaving this way? And thank you, Melissa, for kicking that all to pieces, but
sure.
I needed it, you know, and I love that.
You're welcome.
Thank you again for that.
Yeah. It was fun. We can do it again.
Yeah, I would love to.
A little kicking.
You are quite a kicker, quite a kicker. So, yeah, as both of you guys are. So, let's kind of look at wrapping things up here. One of the things I kind of wrapped up within the blog was that, you know, I'm not writing this blog to express that I figured all this out or that I'm an expert at this stuff. I'm flatly admitting that there's still a small army of monsters of junky thoughts, you know, lurking in my basement. And typically, I've said this before, when I blog about something, then it only gets even more, in my face afterwards. Like, it's like I bring that up and then I'm challenged. You know, the universe kind of challenges me afterwards, it seems like, or my awareness is around it more, so I notice it more for the next few days. So I'm just in this and trying to figure it out as I go. That's why I have smart people like you here to help me out. And so here's a question that I pose here. You know, maybe it's time we dredge the darkness and dump the junk out on the table. We can talk in the daylight and examine this stuff. And we'll see how small and squishy these meek fears are. And then I talk about the story of the elephant, which you probably both heard how they train elephants to be kept as adults by a small rope or a small chain. They start when they're young, and they use a big, thick log chain, and they tie an elephant calf down, and he learns that no matter how hard he tries, he cannot break free from that. As he grows in size and power, they can actually reduce the size of the chain and to where a full-grown elephant, you can keep standing in one spot indefinitely because he's learned that as a young calf with just a small chain. So I think that's a pretty powerful lesson for us, you know, to test these things out. Maybe we're not really as bound as we think we are by this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And it takes lots of testing. And like you said earlier, it's courage. And the more that you do it, though, you feel bolder. And the more you do it, you do have to take breaks because it takes a lot of effort to get yourself out there. But you just realize you're limitless.
Aaron, I was thinking about your blog about the Valentine's Day when you're at the branding iron and you're just busy, 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 you didn't really have time to think about, well, I'm unlovable, I'm not any good at this cooking, restaurant, business thing. You just, and then that night you realize, hey, you do have what it takes. You can pull together as a team. You didn't have time to think about it, to analyze it. And so I agree with Melissa. You have to have some wins in there, and it's just extra proof that, you know, you can, that the monsters, I think they grow smaller. It's makes the monsters go away, get smaller, you know, the more you're doing things. So
yeah, that's great, Michael. And I think that's something that the first world, you know, we have a first world problem of we have a little bit of time in our day to let our brains wander. You know, we're not always going from how are we going to eat, or, you know, cultivating our own food and things like other parts of the world, I don't know that you have time to think about all this stuff. And or are we busy enough? I mean, I'm personally not busy in the sense that I was that night at the Branding Iron, and to where you are just one action after another. And I think a guy that we all know, Steve Chandler, would say that that's, you know, his prescription for this is get in action. Get in action, and this stuff can't really bog you down when you don't have time in between to ponder, you know, to kind of wax profound about this stuff and get all hung up on it. So that's another great solution, is to be in action.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like the combo platter. I like the action. I like a little bit of the thinking. Like you said, get it all out on the table. And I like your ideas too, which is one of my favorite ones, is how seriously do I want to take my thoughts? Right there, bam. How seriously do I want to take this crappy thought?
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. I hope people are taking notes on our our hangout today, because I think there's been some good stuff. So I will wrap us up here and say thank you all once again. Michael Wright, fatherofone.com is his blog, and he had a great one about David Bowie, the Changes lyrics. Oh, yeah. And made me go back and check out some David Bowie last week. So great blog there. And Melissa out of Chicago, and you can check out her website at empoweredparentingsolutions.com. And anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us today. And we'll do this again next week. You're both invited if you're available. And anyone who's watching this is invited as well. So thank you guys for all your good work today. So thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. Bye, Michael.
Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good one, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.